There he is. Chaos Theory is officially in the books. It's only now. It's Jeff and Jordan. Jordan, portals open.
Oh, yeah.
Not Texas, though, today.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. So the winter portal window, I woke up at 5 o'clock. And I remember Kyle McCord went in the portal about like 5:06 or something like that. He went in at the crack of dawn. I set my alarm for 6 this morning and wake up and see like nothing big is broken. And just kept pushing the alarm back an hour until I got up at like 8 and was like, all right, I need to be up now. But yeah, it's been like slow compared to the winter window, but I mean, yeah, we're going to see more guys enter. You know, a lot of the players, the kids, are not really advised on how the portal necessarily works. So most of them have been planning to go in the portal for several days, if not weeks, if not months now. But they won't actually show up to compliance to turn it in until the day it opens.
Right.
And then when that happens, you know, it could take 2 hours for them to show up. It could take 2 days. Yep. You never know. So
as far as Texas goes, Peyton Kirkland is officially appearing in the portal. Samaje Burrell tweeted that he is officially in the portal. Haven't seen anything on Billy Walton. But, Jordan, I'll put you on the spot. I don't know if you want to shed light on where you feel like Billy Walton's heading next. I know you and I talked about it. I don't know if you want to drop any hints, but feel free. Or if not, go ahead. Whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, the source I spoke with, I actually spoke with multiple sources yesterday about Billy Walton, and pretty much everyone liked SMU's chances. Some people had some more of their details. Some other people are just like, yeah, I don't know where he's going, but he has a cousin at SMU just like he had a cousin at Texas. And, you know, SMU, I don't want to say made their money because I don't know if necessarily anything's returned. They've gotten any return from this yet. But, like, yeah. SMU is the king of going and getting these players from Dallas and then play a snap in year one or year two or wherever they originally went to and going and bringing them home. And, I mean, that looks likely for Billy Walton. If you kind of remember, he had a very interesting recruitment, you know, kind of the mid-power five, lower power five type offers. Texas evaluates him in the spring of his junior year. They love him at that point. They're already going all in on Malik Muhammad, who, even though they have different last names, they come from the same family, so they're cousins. And they started going kind of all in on Billy as well as this tweener edge rusher that they liked a lot in the class of 2023 to kind of combine with Colton Vosick as the two edge rushers in that class. Mm-hmm. And they were recruiting him that spring, recruiting him pretty hard. And then Oklahoma State, they got him on an April official visit. You know, it's very interesting. So the whole month of May is kind of a dead period. And it's because coaches are out on the road during spring ball. So you'll see a lot of schools like try to get these April OVs, and some will land early commitments. But, you know, like in Billy Walton's case, it didn't really matter because he ended up still taking his other officials. And with Billy, he kind of just got up to Stillwater and Gundy. I remember he explained it all to Mike, who explained it all to me. Mm-hmm. But Gundy and Oklahoma State were like, hey, buddy, you're never going to play at Texas. Like, you need to come here. Like, all this, like, this is – Texas doesn't develop. Look at all these. I remember they showed him, like, this thing about how they had more players drafted in recent years than Texas and how that was a big thing for him. And then Texas stuck through it, kept recruiting him, got him in on the OV, and he flipped on the OV and – he was solid the rest of the way. But, you know, I like SMU's chances a lot. He has a lot of cousins that played with him on that Sauk team. But the two main ones were Malik Muhammad and Abdul Muhammad, who also goes by H-Ray. And Abdul Muhammad was a three-star defensive back signing in the 2023 class that ended up at SMU. Not sure. I can't remember if he redshirted or not at SMU last year, but I know he got at least one interception in the SMU spring game this year, if not two. Mm-hmm. And he's at least supposed to rotate, if not start. I know that for a fact. So I like SMU a lot for Billy Walton. As far as Samaje Burrell, I haven't even checked in there. That one will kind of be hard just because obviously, you know, everyone knows what or why he's in the portal. And then Peyton Kirkland, I haven't checked in with anyone there, but I know Michigan State was kind of a school for him. That whole staff is gone now. That's the Mel Tucker staff that was recruiting him.
Right.
So not looking at Michigan State, and like, again, I have absolutely no intel here. But if I was a betting man, probably like UCF. That's probably what I think.
Yeah.
He's from Orlando. That program, UCF, they're kind of doing what SMU and Houston do, where they're bringing these players back home. And also, like, UCF doesn't have the strongest NIL, but they will spend more money in the portal than they will anywhere else, which you would kind of assume is a normal thing, but not necessarily. So UCF, I could totally see Peyton Kirkland posting a UCF graphic in the next few weeks. But again, that's off absolutely zero intel.
Yeah, when you said it, you know, Michigan State to me jumped out, and that I was like, well, I mean, they were one of his spots. I actually thought that's where he was going, was Michigan State initially. But like you said, that's an entirely different staff now. That staff got run out, and it's Jonathan Smith and that staff that came over from whoever came over with him from Oregon State. So, yeah.
And also, like, I'm not trying to be an asshole, but, like, man, so this is, like, an example of how recruiting so much of it's for show. Is like, you look back at his top five that didn't include Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what logos were in there outside of Michigan State and Ohio State. But, like, I remember getting told as soon as he posted it by Hudson Standish that it was going to be Texas, even though they weren't in there. And I remember looking at all the schools on there and being like, outside of Michigan State, I don't know which of these would take him. You know what I mean? In like
Alabama, Florida, Miami, Michigan State, Oklahoma were his top five.
Okay. Oklahoma, maybe. I know Miami that cycle. No. Florida, maybe. Bama, no. But like now, like it makes it a lot harder for anyone to look at his older, you know, recruitment and be like, okay, where could this guy be going?
Yeah.
Just because, like what I said, he probably wasn't a take. And like all those schools are going to have different staffs but Florida will be different. Oklahoma, I mean, they won't be different. But
you have no faith in Billy Napier, Jordan.
Yeah, I don't. I made that very clear. And I feel bad because he actually follows me on Twitter.
Seems like a good dude.
There's a lot of guys who are great dudes, but are just bad football coaches. I think Charlie Strong's a great dude.
Chuck Strong, man. Hell yeah.
So, so now with Peyton Kirkland, Samaje Burrell, and Billy Walton in the portal, Texas is now at 86 scholarships. So, you know, we're going to need at least one more guy to come out with an announcement. And we anticipate Texas adding at least one guy, most likely two guys, through the portal. So that means at least two to three more guys probably have to announce. So,
it's got, you know, the second portal window mirrors the second high school recruiting window. So everything got done in that before the December signing period, you know, Phil Samee and all the guys that got added at the end. And then we're sitting here in January and February, and it's like, well, it's just nothing really going on at that point. And everybody knows what the needs are. You know, it's interior defensive line. And if you have a surprise defection, like we talked about yesterday, maybe you go best player available. If something pops up in the portal that's just too good to pass up, you know, you could look at it, but there aren't any pressing needs for this team right now other than interior defensive line.
Yeah. And speaking of interior defensive line, or I guess before I get into that, if you want a show on the transfer portal, and I try to be as unbiased when I say this, and I think it is unbiased, but the 24/7 sports like transfer portal show blows all the others out of the water, and it's not, like, pardon my language, it's not fucking close. It's just not. it's an amazing show, great production. We have the best people that cover the portal in the industry work for 24/7, and they're on air talking about it, so... if you want to check that out, it's over on the 24/7 Sports YouTube. But as I was watching that show this morning, Chris Hummer, who's, you know, our main portal guy, talked about Bill Norton, who's the interior defensive lineman from Arizona that actually entered. I still don't know if he's actually entered the portal. I know he announced his intentions, but I never saw anyone on Twitter post he's actually in there, but I do assume he is.
Yeah.
So with that being...
He enters as a grad transfer.
Yes, yes. So with that being said, if I remember correctly what Hummer kind of said, I don't remember the exact words he said, but I think he sees Texas as a favorite for Norton, but pretty much every SEC school you can think of is trying to get involved. So, like, with that being said, the price could be going up. And, you know, like I talked about yesterday, there are a lot more teams that need D linemen than there are D linemen who are talented enough to play at those teams. So a lot of these guys are going to have ridiculous markets for them. And this could be a cause of it. You know, there's not a ton of Bill Nortons walking around in the portal. So all the other SEC schools, they need them too. So still like Texas chances there. I'm going to ride with Chris Hummer on anything he wants to ride on. Just that's how much I trust him. That's the type of journalist I look at him as.
Yeah.
So still like Texas's chances, but I don't think that one is as much of a slam dunk as many thought it was originally. So
yeah, you know, interior defensive line is always one of those places where very, very rare is the school that doesn't need either offensive line help or interior D line help. You know, so I would expect the usual players to be, I mean, hell, you look at Texas last year, we talk about Texas having the best interior D line in the country. They still took a transfer in the spring window when they added Trill Carter, because Sark just wanted to be 1,000% sure that they weren't going to be lacking, kind of a worst case scenario type deal. I would expect, Jordan, the typical players to be involved for Bill Norton. I mean, Florida State's always heavily involved in the portal. You know, he's from the state of Tennessee. You know, Tennessee hits the portal hard. Auburn does really good in the transfer portal. Alabama needs a little bit of everything right now.
The only school off top I can think of that, like, or the two schools I can think of off top that are like, okay, we're probably, this dude wouldn't play, A&M and Ole Miss. Just because A&M, like, and I thought it was kind of interesting. A Hummer brought this up before he started talking about A&M, but he's like, everyone in our industry loves to talk about everyone who left A&M. Like, they actually signed a decent secondary portal class. But as much talent that the College Station lost because of Jimbo Fisher's exit or firing, he still got a lot of NFL bodies down there. And in fact, like, not trying to necessarily rub any Texas fans the wrong way that might be on here, but like, there is probably more NFL talent in the D-line room at A&M, interior D-line, than there might be at Texas currently.
Yeah, that's like, not a stretch. That's not a stretch.
Look back at what they recruited and how they recruited. We know how they got them there, you know, and I always talk about what's important with D-line recruiting, and it doesn't just pay dividends with recruiting rankings. It actually improves your football team as well. So, but – so, yeah, I wouldn't see A&M or Ole Miss necessarily getting super involved with Bill Norton. I know Oklahoma, talking to Colin Kennedy, it seems like the coaches at Oklahoma have really liked how the freshman D-line class that they signed has come on in spring football. Jaden Jackson, who we had ranked as a three-star and actually was silently committed to Texas at one point over this summer. Hank and I did our best to be like, hey, we know this kid's a three-star, but like, they don't look at him like that.
Yeah.
And there is a serious chance Jaden Jackson starts as a true freshman by the end of the season at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Not because Oklahoma's necessarily weak at that position, but because he's that good. And like, I remember he goes to IMG. I remember seeing him play when I went out there with Colin Kennedy in Nashville to go see IMG play Lipscomb Academy. And IMG had David Stone, who finished as a five-star also at Oklahoma, at edge. They had Jaden Jackson as one of the D tackles. They had TJ Lindsey, who was another three-star D tackle out of Arkansas, transferred to IMG. He ended up at Auburn. And then I forgot the other kid. It was some kid who ended up at like Georgia Tech or something as an edge rusher. They had four Power 5 D linemen. And Jaden Jackson was by far the best one. And one of those D linemen was a five-star. So coming away from that, I knew he was pretty special, so I'm not surprised to see he's kind of doing amazing so far through spring. But yeah, so Bill Norton might be some comp there with the SEC, but don't really see it being the main schools Texas could or wouldn't necessarily compete with for
talent. Is Nigel Smith going to be an interior guy for OU, or is that TBD?
Yeah, so he was always kind of a tweener in high school, but I actually did ask about him within like the last week, and they're working him out at D-line. And he was always, to be honest with you, I was never in love with Nigel Smith as a prospect. I didn't really love our ranking for him. And the way I always viewed him is super high floor, but just like decently close to a ceiling already. Not that he's physically maxed out, but like he's so much further ahead in his developmental process than other kids are that play the same position. So,
yeah. And then, I'm looking at a story right now on the OU site about David Stone and Jaden Jackson kind of living up to the blue chip billing early in spring. So it's going to be interesting for OU. So, yeah, but the point is, man, Bill Norton, let's say Bill Norton was in the winter window. He would have been a big target because he's got length and size and all the things you can't coach. But to your point, he's making himself a little more coin, waiting and going into the portal right now when there are the choices are few and far between.
Yeah. So, well, look, the only way I would ever advise someone to wait till the spring window is if, like, you're a guy like Bill Norton that the SEC will be in on.
Yeah.
If you're a guy that hasn't played any snaps, you're hosed. You need to go in the winter one. But, like, yeah. Like, if I ever meet a player that, like, I know will get picked up in the portal 1,000%, it's like, buddy, you got to go in the spring.
Yeah.
Because you're getting paid way more.
Yeah. It's so. But for the guy, I worry about the guys. We saw a couple of guys, two guys at Texas that entered during the winter window. Xavion Bryce, BJ Allen. Yeah. They ended up at North Texas. Had they waited, had they stayed through the spring? Like, I don't know if they would be.
Yeah, no. They didn't have the luxury to stay till the spring.
Yeah. Larry Turner Gooden, same deal, and then up at San Jose State.
Yeah, and so with Billy Walton, you could say, like, he should have just left in winter as well. But Billy Walton was a summer enrollee, and he only played in the Baylor and Wyoming game, and he didn't record a single stat, so he kind of needed film.
Yeah.
Samaje Burrell was also a summer enrollee.
Peyton Kirkland had the knee injury and didn't play at all last year.
Exactly. I was blanking. I'm like, okay, wait. I didn't want another maybe.
Yeah. If we see any of those guys from the 23 class enter, it'll be guys that played very little, most likely, last year.
Yeah, and I mean, any comment section with Hayes Fawcett, if it's a Texas player, it's going to get spun somehow by their fan bases. But, like, man, if you watch the show regularly, I assume you watch Texas and pay attention to the football program regularly. You don't need any reminder of the type of contributors these guys are. And we wish them the best going forward. But, I couldn't tell you who the biggest loss would be if you asked me to go through the portal exits this year. You know what I mean? Like,
even going back to the winter,
like, probably Malik Murphy, just because he's a quarterback and that position's valuable. Then, man,
Jordan, you can't have multiple scholarship quarterbacks that can actually play.
Yeah. I was just trying to think, like, look through the guys Texas has lost. None of them were ever super big-time contributors. So, like, it's genuinely kind of hard to pick who the biggest loss is. Like, at least Malik Murphy actually contributed to winning you some games and played major snaps,
Yeah. I mean, Jaron Thompson is a grad. Keaton Crawford ends up at Nevada. Trill Carter. Yeah, I mean,
Auburn.
It's Casey Kane.
Yeah.
Really, your contributors are, it's Malik Murphy, it's Jaron Thompson, and then maybe Jalen Catalan might be three, and compared to how much he played because of the injuries, that would be a distant third.
Yeah. Jeff, I want to ask you about this because yesterday we didn't really talk about it, and all I saw on our board was people getting excited about the basketball auditions. I also saw in the group chat, it actually, you know, so with us, the way we cover things, our content, it will always appear we're excited about every edition. That isn't the case. However, in the Horns 24/7 group chat behind closed doors, seemed like Chip Brown, Eric Henry, you, Hank South, were all pretty pleased with the additions team made. Whereas me, I'm like, I've never heard of any of these guys. So, like, what are we looking at here?
College basketball watching ass.
Is Texas going to the Final Four next year? Like, what are we thinking, Mr. Howell?
The Tremont Mark move was welcomed. And, you know, I hope people realize now, I said this yesterday with BK, you know, anybody that was questioning, oh, man, look at Cam Scott asked out of his national letter of intent and blame RT. I thought everybody loved RT. Well, that was the staff wanting to do right by Cam Scott, and Cam Scott realizing, yeah, if I want to play minutes as a freshman, it ain't going to be at Texas, because you're going to pair Tremont Mark with Trey Johnson, and you're going to have one hell of a scoring tandem on the wings. I'll just go through the moves, you know, with Kent. Kent, you've got to have bodies that can gobble up front court minutes right now, because you've got Shedrick, you've got Onyema, and whatever Devon Pryor is going to be, and that's it for your front court. So we know they're going to need to add another big, but you need somebody that can eat up front court minutes and that has some experience. So, because I don't know when Nick Cody's going to be coming back off the ACL. I mean, I'm thinking probably closer to the start of conference play, like maybe mid-January, something like that. Maybe that kind of that full, because I think he got hurt in mid-February. But I don't know Nick Cody's recovery time or whatever. You know, some guys recover, take longer. Some guys bounce back quicker. It just depends. So you need somebody to need front court minutes. And then with Julian Larry, what Texas had 2 years ago, when you had Tyrese Hunter, Marcus Carr, and Jabari Rice, you had three guards.
Jabari Rice.
I'm just shorthanding it. Yes, Sir Jabari Rice.
Talk about our king the right way. Sorry. Yeah, that my favorite Texas basketball player of all time. I'll stop cutting.
Love me some Sergeant Murray Rice. But you had three guys that could all play on the ball, could all be your lead guard, and you could have one of those guys running the second unit. You could have two of those guys starting, and you could kind of swap them out as you went. And, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, when you look at how things are trending for Texas right now. Eric Bossy's mentioned this, you know, Jordan Pope from Oregon State is a guy that is going to start his official visit to Texas today. Texas is the odds-on favorite to land him. Man, if you get Pope with Larry, that is two guys. Again, you've got one guy who's definitely going to be your lead guard, Jordan Pope, if you get him. And then Julian Larry, a veteran guy that can run your second unit, and you could do some different things with him. So I love that move. And I talked about Tremont Mark. So the additions have been good, and there's still work to be done, trust me. With the departures, I'll say this, man. It's bittersweet for me, because I've never had more fun being around a team since I've been doing this than being around that basketball team that went to the Elite Eight. Just a good group of dudes, like I've talked about. And for Tyrese Hunter and Dylan Mitchell, I think the biggest issue with both guys, it wasn't really an issue, pretty much 10 games into their first season at Texas, that wasn't what they signed up for. Tyrese Hunter came to Texas to play for Chris Beard. Dylan Mitchell actually committed when Yurik Malagi was on staff, and Yurik went to be the lead assistant for Jerome Tang at K-State. So Yurik's gone before Dylan Mitchell plays a game, and then Chris Beard's gone before Christmas. So, you know, those guys had a tough first year from that standpoint. And, you know, Dylan's on-court struggles were documented. Tyrese dealt with some injuries. Bottom line is, Jordan, I don't think either of those guys expected to be at Texas for more than a year. I think they both thought they were going to be one and done headed to the NBA. And I think at times you probably saw that this last year, that neither one of them expected to be back. I'm not saying they sandbagged it or anything, but you could tell just the same juice wasn't there at times. So I think it's more of a change of scenery, I think would do both guys well. I think it's kind of a career reset for both guys. I think they both still have a chance to be really good players, but their time at Texas is done, and it just it's weird that, you know, we were sitting here 2 years ago, celebrating the Chris Beard hire, and now in terms of the roster, those two guys were the last two guys left with any attachment to Chris Beard, and now 2 years later, it's an entirely different regime. You know, you've had some assistant coaches come and go, and obviously RT's in charge, but it's crazy how fast things can change in college basketball. So it's bittersweet just to think about still what might have been, but can't do that. Got to move forward. And I really dig the roster RT's putting together. Like I said, they need to add a big, you know, they've got two guys on officials right now. Jordan Pope, I think, would be a massive piece. I mean, if you go into the season with a backcourt of Jordan Pope, Trey Johnson, and Tremont Mark, dude, you got one of the best backcourts in the country, no question. And then it's all about can Caden Shedrick stay healthy? What are you surrounding with in the front court? All that stuff. So I don't want to say it was addition by subtraction with Tyrese Hunter and Dylan Mitchell. I don't think that's fair, but I do think that this team right here is really going to be the first team that we get a chance to see, okay, how does Rodney Terry really want to build a roster? And I think what you're seeing is kind of what RT told me when he first got back to Texas. We were talking about recruiting, and he said at guard, he said, we need to get longer. We need to get more athletic. And I think with the guys they're targeting, the guys they've landed, they're getting longer and they're getting more athletic with those additions. So I dig it, man. I like where it's headed.
Yeah, so with Dylan Mitchell out, Tyrese Hunter out, Brock Cunningham out of eligibility.
The Sioux out of eligibility.
The Sioux.
Smith out of eligibility.
Abe Smith, that's five. How many other – was the first guy who went in the portal, was he a walk-on? He was, right? Adam McKinney.
So Gavin Perryman was on scholarship.
No, not him. The kid went to McKinney.
Oh, Alex Anamekwe. Yeah, he was on scholarship. Anamekwe was a scholarship kid.
Okay, so that's seven then that have left. So how many guys have they added through the portal?
So you still got the returning. You've got Kendall Weaver. And by the way, I didn't mean to speak ill of Kendall Weaver.
I'm just trying to figure out how many scholarships they have right now open going into next season. Because they only have one freshman, Trey Johnson, since they're not taking Cam Scott.
No, Cody. You got Nick Cody.
Okay, that's right.
So you got Nick Cody and Trey Johnson. Returning, you've got Weaver, Onyema, Devon Pryor, Shedrick. And then the three new additions. So you got eight right now.
Okay. And then my dog from Westlake, Preston Clark, he's walk-on, right?
Yep.
Okay. Got it. I assume so, but I didn't know if he'd maybe earned it. Because wasn't the kid from McKinney that went in the portal, like, was he not walk-on originally?
No, Adam Echo is a scholarship guy out of the gate. They took him as a developmental forward, thinking that maybe he could at some point fill that Brock Cunningham role, maybe, but just didn't work out.
Got it. And I'm sorry, how many scholarships do basketball teams at the Power 5 level usually carry? 12, 13?
You can have up to 13, but yeah, usually if you're carrying 13, usually one of those is going to be, like you said, that walk-on that might have earned it. You're not going to usually carry like 13 scholarship dudes that can all play. Probably your last one or two scholarships will be walk-ons.
Got it. Well, yeah, no, just wanted to talk a little basketball because I didn't know anything about who Texas added. So
yeah, that's it. So I guess
is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar still on the market?
As far as I know,
what's his actual name?
I don't even know.
I gotcha. I figured you might know. I don't know. So one thing I kind of want to talk about, and I was just saving it for a slow day, I guess, because honestly, I expected today to be a little more active in the portal. But man, in 2026 running back recruiting, so Texas currently has one commitment from Alito. Alito's Racing Gallery. He's unranked by us right now. We only have 100 kids ranked in 2026.
Robbie Avila, from the kid from Indiana State.
Got it. We only have 100 kids ranked right now in our 2026 rankings, but yeah, just double checking. April 24th, our 2026 rankings will update to about 300 or so kids. It'll be a top 247. It'll be a couple unranked 4 stars, several 3 stars. There should be about 30 to 40 ish kids from the state of Texas that get ranked during that time. When that happens, we expect Racing Guillory to get his stars. He'll probably, if I'm being completely honest with you, probably towards the back half of the top 247 if he makes it. They might also just keep him unranked and wait until he recovers from his injury and we can see what his times look like, because it is incredibly important, because it is draft projection rankings. But as long as Tashaar Choice is at Texas, Texas is going to sign 2 running backs every cycle. They already have obviously one in 2026, Racing Guillory. And as much as I talk down about the 2025 class being incredibly weak, being incredibly strong at some positions, 2026 is pretty damn weak so far. But the good thing is the running back class for 2026 is really, really strong in Texas, because outside of Racing Guillory, you also have Javion Osborne at Forney, Tre'Davious Ball at Texas High. And then Texas hasn't even offered this kid yet, I'm pretty sure, but his name is Davian Gross. He goes to Frisco Lone Star. And he might actually be the best one out of all the kids I just mentioned. But, you know, yeah, double checking. Texas has not offered Davian Gross. He's got pretty much most of the other ones except Texas. So maybe we'll see a spring eval there. But the dynamics in running back recruiting are interesting, because Racing Guillory has continued to visit like pretty much just about every other school. I know since his Texas commitment, he's off the top showing up to TCU, Georgia, I believe maybe Alabama as well. He's getting around, and he always told Choice in Texas that's what he'd do. I don't want to say they're necessarily cool with it. I know they probably wouldn't prefer he does it. But, you know, they took his commitment knowing who he is and what he's about. So the reason I bring all this up is because Oklahoma also already has a running back commitment. And it's Cibolo Steele's Jonathan Hatton. And he's also, of all the names in 2026, he's got to be the first or second best one. He has verified 10-6 speed as a kid who's actually supposed to be in his grade. That's every bit of what he's listed at. I believe he's 6 foot and in the 200s too as a sophomore. And Jonathan Hatton was my favorite running back at the time whenever Texas offered him. But the thing is, they took too long to offer him. He was already going to Oklahoma. He just wanted to shut down his recruitment that early. And I honestly think that kind of set the dominoes for Racing Guillory as well. But with both of those schools already having a guy, you talk to Tre'Davious Ball, you talk to Javion Osborne, the two main schools for them seem to feel like it's OU and Texas. And it's a lot of these schools also like OU, or a lot of these kids love Tashaar Choice. They love DeMarco Murray. And there's not going to be enough spots for all of them. So the way Choice in running back recruiting works, usually around spring of a cycle's junior year. So around like February, March of this year was whenever Choice kind of decided that Ricky Stewart was who he viewed as the number one running back in the state of Texas. Texas, a lot of programs do this, but Texas specifically, they'll use the month of February during the dead period to really do deep evaluations on guys from their first 3 years of high school. And that's when they'll decide on some different kids they're recruiting, like, hey, we are done talking to this kid, or he's done visiting. Like, we've already made the choice. We're not taking this guy.
Yeah.
And that's also whenever, not only are we not taking this guy, that's whenever the board's getting reshuffled. And that's whenever everyone's getting evaluated. And it's the deepest Texas has gone on them at that point. And whenever that happened with running backs, that's when Tashaar Choice and, you know, the running back personnel department came up with a conclusion that they viewed Ricky Stewart as the number one in-state back. And from that point on, they kind of went all in on him. They had already offered him previously that junior day. They knew Texas was his dream school, and not that it'd be easy to get done, but easier than others. And they kind of turned up the heat, and they got his commitment whenever he came and visited again. So we're probably not going to have a ton of concrete standing, I guess, on what the board looks like for 2026 is at running back up until next spring. But, like, it's going to be something to monitor for sure. And another thing I want to circle back on that I talked about last week about how it was important that Texas A&M lands Husan Longstreet for the sake if Texas wants to go get Keelan Russell. Mm-hmm. And it ended up pulling through for A&M. They got their guy, which is best case scenario for Texas if you're thinking Keelan Russell. So just wanted to circle back to that because I know most people who are watching this aren't paying attention to A&M recruiting. So, but yeah. So Jeff, I don't know what else you got top of mind.
Well, some some tidbits are starting to trickle out from Sark's availability today, which started shortly after 11 thereabouts. And we'll have that for you at Horns 24/7. By the way, if you're not a subscriber at Horns 24/7, get over to the site right now. Take advantage. We've got a transfer portal special, 60% off of your annual VIP subscription. We only offer the 60 a couple of times a year. This is one of them. So if you want to subscribe to the site, get over there. What you got to love about 24/7 Sports is if you subscribe to the Texas site, you're an annual VIP member. You still get access to other message boards. You can go look and read VIP content on other sites. So you want to get a heads up on, you know, anybody on Texas schedule, Florida, Georgia, A&M, whatever anybody's got going on, Arkansas. We got some really good sites in the SEC. Really happy to be joining that SEC network of sites we got. Get over to Horns 24/7. Check that out right now. Again, 60% off of an annual. One of the things, Jordan, that's trickling out from Sark's availability, Quinn Ewers was tremendous on Saturday in the close scrimmage. And Arch Manning probably had his best practice of the spring today. So it's a little quarterback, intel for you. From
per Steve Sarkisian.
That is per Sark, sir. That is not sourced information.
Yeah, well, my ass, buddy. Like, come on. Okay. Yeah, no. Love to hear it. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say. Love to hear it. It was funny. I did. Are we all ready for Arch Manning to just shove down our throats again this weekend whenever he throws a slant to
receiver? If you're
not, they need this B-roll, baby. You know, he doesn't play a ton in the real games. They need the spring game footage.
And so. I'm gonna tell our news desk on Saturday because I know they'll, you know, I don't know who else has spring games this Saturday, but
A&M and OU.
I'm gonna tell news desk, like, look, y'all want anything on Arch? Y'all can have it, man. We got plenty of time to write Arch Manning content at Horns 24/7.
Yeah, I hate it because it's so, like, this everything that gets said about it and all of it. But, like, at the same time, when you're looking at it from my perspective, it's like it's guaranteed engagements every time.
It is.
So,
it is.
Like, I'm running the Horns 24/7 Instagram. Like, every time it's doing numbies, every time. But, yeah. Oh, Antoine, so I actually have something for you. These two guys are in different classes right now. Booby Feaster, it'll probably pop up if you Google Booby Feaster, but his real name's actually Ethan, or at least that's what his 24/7 profile says. And then John Tarantine. So they're in different classes right now, but Booby Feaster, it's kind of like the worst kept secret in Dallas. He's working on reclassing. So he's likely eventually going to be a 2026. Don't know when that move would happen. It usually happens whenever guys are going into that summer during their junior year. So potentially next summer he can announce it. But I mean, yeah, Booby Feaster's next up. That's the next Jonte Cook, DeCorin Moore, whatever you want to call it. That's the next elite receiver out of the Dallas area. And I mean, he already is elite. He started as a freshman at DeSoto and is over 6 foot, just understands the game. That freshmen don't, at a level that most freshmen don't. And as far as Tarantine, I really like Texas' chances already, and mostly just because it kind of feels like Texas is already focused in on him as the number one lineman in the state of Texas. Not that that decision is done and that that's a done deal. Like, obviously, you're going to continue evaluating other guys, and there are people who could pass him on the board, or you could drop from a spot on the board for whichever reasons. But Turnteen is going to be one of the biggest targets in the state next cycle, and a lot to like about him as a prospect. His father played at TCU, offensive line at TCU, and John is actually John Turnteen the third. But a lot to like about that. In my opinion, he's the best offensive tackle I've seen from the state of Texas so far in his cycle in 2026. But, you know, in full transparency, I haven't gotten a ton of exposure to the offensive lineman in 2026. So I think he's really good. As far as number eight overall prospect, which On3 has him at, I don't know about all that. But, you know, I think he is a bona fide top 247 kid. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. So, yeah. And Blake Griffin, I mean, I assumed he was already retired. I couldn't tell you the last time I saw Blake Griffin on TV. So, like, what has he been – has he been playing overseas?
Yeah, no, Blake Griffin, Griffin last
– like, how many max contracts do you got to have and you're playing overseas? I would just pick it up.
Blake Griffin had – except for the illegitimate children, and he didn't blow up to like 330 pounds. It's a very Sean Kemp-like fall from grace for Blake Griffin. You have any idea? You know, when I say Sean Kemp, Jordan, does that name ring a bell, like, at all? Does that do anything for you?
Yeah, well, I know he was with the Sonics and had a crazy fall off, but I never remember what the crazy fall off. Doesn't he –
he had – Sean Kemp had all kinds of problems. He had alcohol problems.
I know the one thing I actually saw about him recently, it was somewhere on social media. I don't remember what platform, but I think he's trying to start like a weed brand or a dispensary or some shit, and something involved with legal marijuana and THC, and I believe in the state of Washington. So, yeah. So
Sean Kemp, according to the always reliable source that is Wikipedia, has fathered at least seven children with six different women.
Rookie numbers. Yeah. He probably has nightmares about Antonio Cromartie.
And Travis Henry, and just go down the list. Nah, man,
of the people.
Blake Griffin's one of those guys that I think when you look at the numbers for Blake Griffin's career, I think you'll realize that he was better maybe than you thought, a little more effective than you thought. It's just... he's one of those dudes, man, when the physical stuff went away, you know, his ability to jump out of the gym and be the best athlete on the floor, when that went away, it fell off real quick.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just trying to pull up John Turnteen's numbers right now from Under Armour.
Oh, you have that, do you?
Maybe. He's 6'3.6". Like, look, he's really good, but it is too early to say he's going to be better than anyone in 2025. Look, again, he's really good, but, like, there are three bona fide guys – or three guys who I look at, I'm like, that's an NFL player in Dallas alone at offensive tackle this year, and it's Lamont Rogers, Ty Haywood, and Michael Fasusi. Mm-hmm. Do I think Turnteen could be better than them? Yes, but, like, I'm not going to come out and say that right now. Like – Turnteen, there are multiple times where, like, he was on the bench at North Crowley last year. So, again, I think he's the best in-state lineman. Haven't had as much exposure to the other guys. At the same time, no one in the market travels more than me and sees kids in person more than me. So, but, yeah, I agree with Jerry in that I think he will be the top. But as far as the current two cycles, I think it's too early to say that. But I could see it being true. And Blake Griffin and Matt Leinart having the same baby mama is kind of scary. But
so, man, here's something. Gosh, man, this is crazy. So Blake Griffin didn't play at all this year. He played last year with the Celtics. Blake Griffin, in his five of his – so he was technically a rookie in 09, didn't play that year because he had microfracture surgery. The 10-11 season is his first season. He's rookie of the year. He's an all-star. So in his first, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of his six first, five of his first 6 years in the league, he's a five-time all-star. He makes four all-NBA teams, rookie of the year, finishes in the top eight in the MVP voting twice. In his last 12 years in the league, his final 12 years in the league, one all-star game, one all-NBA team. It was a third team when he was with Detroit in 18-19.
Damn.
Like, and it, the numbers are fine. Like, you look at that 18-19 season with Detroit, I mean, he's 24.5 points, 7.5 boards. Let's see, just though, that's about one stock a game, almost 5.5 assists. So, but then after that, it falls off a cliff. He's never over 15 points a game at that point. So,
no, this isn't what we'll remember Blake Griffin about. At least it's not what I'll remember Blake Griffin about. What I'll remember, the legendary commercials he had with Kia. But what was the one where he kicks a football to like the moon or some shit and is like stick that football
thing,
or something? The
best Blake Griffin thing you'll ever see has nothing to do with basketball. You know, Blake Griffin, I don't know if he still does it, but there was a time where on the side he would do stand-up comedy. When we get done with the show, go to YouTube, see if you can find Blake Griffin on the Alec Baldwin Comedy Central roast. It's legitimately funny. Like, he's on that panel with like some really funny comedians. I think Anthony Jeselnik was on there. There's some really funny people on that panel. Nikki Glaser was on that one. Blake Griffin was freaking hilarious. I don't think Jeselnik was on that one, actually. It's Nikki Glaser, Chris Redd from SNL was there. Jeff Ross is on all of those. But dude, Blake Griffin was freaking hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, man, he was fun. Like, this might just be a super casual take because I don't watch a ton of the NBA, but at the same time, like, it's hard to get into the NBA now. Like, it's so hard. They don't give a shit about anything. You know what I mean? And it's like there's so much BS like that there used to not be.
Well, the playing games start tonight. So
yeah, I'll be watching those.
Get in line with it.
But like, think about Lob City, right? CP3, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. Shit, they had Jamal Crawford too. A really fun team. Is there a team remotely close to as fun to watch as them nowadays? That I can, like, there's a player, Wemby, because he's just better than everyone. But like, you know what? It might just be the nostalgia too, where you're looking back at something like that. You're gonna view it as being better than it is.
You talk about Lob City. I had more fun watching the Clippers back in like my late high school, early college days when it was Darius Miles, Lamar Odom, Quentin Richardson. That group of Clippers. Sam Cassell was with them for a minute, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to circle back to this. Can you please elaborate on this? Like, what do you mean he was trying to get memorabilia back? Did he sell it to someone for money and then was like, hey, I'm actually like, I'm just curious because I know you're up there in Washington too, or at least I'm pretty sure you are. So I figured you're going to know more than us and you're going to know more than what we could probably get on Google.
All right. I'm just reading this story. He was booked. Okay, hold on. There's a tweet from the Tacoma Police Department about this incident. It said, this was on March 8, 2023. It said, at 1:58 p.m., an altercation between the occupants of two cars led to shots being fired at a parking lot in the 4500 block of North Steel Street. One car fled. No injuries were reported. A gun was recovered. A 53-year-old male, who's Kemp, was booked for a drive-by shooting. The investigation is ongoing. Kemp figured in the Seattle area with local business, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I don't see where it talks about memorabilia, though.
I don't know, dude. Like, I know it's not all of them, but like, some of these athletes, dog, it's like you are one of the most recognizable people in the earth and you're like 6'6 and look like a Greek god. You know, like you're gonna stand out. You're gonna get caught.
Man, Sean Kemp 6'10", so yeah. And dude, you're in freaking you're in Tacoma. Like people are gonna know who Sean Kemp is.
Yeah. No, but I'm just talking about like the I don't know. Like Jelani McDonald isn't a recognizable face or name, but like if Jelani McDonald was to walk past me down the street in Chicago, I'd probably look at him being like 6'3" with a 7-foot wingspan and be like, hey, looks like a football player or something. Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like
Mo Bamba couldn't commit a crime.
Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? So,
you know, so, and I love Mo, by the way, but yeah, he Mo couldn't get away with a crime.
And also it's like, yo, like y'all got the money. Go pay someone else to do that dumb shit. Like, come on. You don't got someone you grew up with that says yes to everything you ask him to do?
Most of Sean Kemp's money probably is going to child support, for being honest. Yeah,
true. I mean, shit. He only got two more than he can have a whole ass AAU team.
Man, that's wild, though. Now, so you liked watching Blake Griffin with the Lob City Clippers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good times. And I mean, they had the commercials. They're churning them out, too. Great way to strike while the iron's hot. You're good. But yeah, I don't know, man. Like the NBA has just been hard to watch. Like I'm a LeBron guy. That's who got me into sports.
LeBron.
But yeah, and yeah, I mean, the Lakers are they in playing games? They are, huh? Or no? I'm about to look.
I don't think they're.
Yeah, Lakers and Pelicans tonight at 6:30.
Is that a 9-10 game?
That's 7 and 8. Warriors and Kings is 9 and 10. That's at 9.
Ooh, that actually would be good. Man, the West is back to being kind of what it was again when I was like late high school, early college, where it was like, all right, what JV team is going to get sacrificed from the East to whoever wins the West?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Antonio Cromartie. I saw him like asking people on Twitter for a job the other day.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like being like, who has analyst jobs open?
Yeah. I'm like,
it's like, dog, weren't you an analyst for like 10 years? Like, don't you have to graduate at some point? At some point A&M was like cutting corners and they were having him as a GA.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, like please show me what curriculum this guy is going to class for.
I was gonna say, was he not at Jimbo at A&M for a minute?
Yeah, no, he was. So, but yeah,
I'm not picking on you with the Blake Griffin comment about the dunk over the car being overrated, but I imagine there would be a healthy show of hands in the chat or on the Coda text line of people that don't like Blake Griffin for one reason and one reason only. He's a Sooner.
Yeah.
Well,
also, here's the thing. I don't know if this is most overrated dunk. Most overrated dunk might be not LeBron. Michael Jordan's dunk contest dunk. Like, that's like a warm-up in every dunk contest nowadays.
Whoa.
Like, I get it. It's nostalgic.
Time out. Time the hell out. We're not going to sit here on this YouTube feed and disrespect the GOAT, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, in any way.
I'm not trying to, but Jeff, answer this. Can high schoolers not jump from the free throw line and dunk nowadays? Can
they not? I don't watch too much high school basketball.
I'm not hating on Michael Jordan. I'm just saying. I have seen high schoolers
jump from the free throw line is the most overrated dunk ever.
He was the first to do it. I understand why it's special, but like, is there not a dunk contest with a jump from the free throw line or around the free throw line every single year now? Like, is that not a correct statement?
Yeah, but that's like saying, oh, so Jesse Owens ran really fast, but it's overrated because people have run faster since. Well, no, it was pretty freaking special when he did it.
Yeah, I'm not saying it wasn't special. I'm just saying it's not as special.
If you really want to know my opinion, the most overrated dunk in the dunk contest, honestly, and I don't really have a problem with the guy that I'm going to bring up, but I didn't understand why everybody lost their minds with the Dwight Howard Superman dunk.
That yeah, he didn't even touch the rim. He threw like, that bitch.
Threw the ball through the basket. Like, that's not really a dunk. The most underrated dunk ever, most underrated dunk without question. I don't know if you remember this. You remember the year Gerald Green was in the dunk contest? They lit a cupcake, put a candle in a cupcake and put it on the back of the rim and blew the candle out. Like, that was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I'm like, that's freaking amazing. Like, nobody else thought to do that.
My favorite. The only dunk contest I've actually watched every single the only dunk contest I've watched every single dunk in it was the first Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon dunk contest.
They
did back-to-back years.
Those were
like
fun.
I remember Aaron Gordon sitting up in the chair like 8 feet in the fucking air when he did under the legs. I don't know what that dunk is called because it's under – like that one was awesome. LaVine was awesome.
Jason Richardson.
Zach LaVine is like to this day one of my favorite players to play with in 2K because he can shoot and he can just run around you and then dunk on your center. And he's like an 83 overall for no reason.
I'll be honest. When I was a kid, people were like, oh man, when we were younger, the dunk contest was great. No, it was kind of, there was some cornball stuff going on in the dunk contest when I was a kid.
Yeah. Like also, the athletes back then weren't the athletes they are today.
Right. After the Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins era, like, D. Brown, like, putting his hand over his eyes. I'm like, okay, it's all right. Cedric Sabalos won it 1 year with a blindfold. I think Harold Miner won a dunk contest. I'm like, eh.
Okay, you can't talk about how corny that shit is and then, like, oh, Michael Jordan won it.
He jumped from the free throw line. He jumped from the free throw line. It's an athletic feat. He jumped from the free throw line.
All right. Yeah, no, I also
just Dr. J did it first.
Now I know it gets Jeff riled up, so it's over now. You messed up. But hey, fun fact, I'm pretty sure it's the same Gerald Green, but he's actually missing like half of one of his fingers.
The hell do you
do? Fireworks.
It was something that happened to him when he was like a kid. I remember reading about it. It honestly might have been his finger might have gotten stuck in a net. Or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Do like one of those JPP bits? Have a bad maim yourself in a 4th of July accident?
Yeah. I don't know. The best thing was, who was that USC player that he like broke multiple bones in both of his legs?
Josh Shaw.
And was like, yeah, sorry. I was saving my drowning nephew and I jumped from like the fourth story of my house or something. They're like, dude, your house isn't even four stories or something.
Dude, Sark was the head coach at USC when that happened. Yeah.
Okay, what was the full story again, just so we can get it right?
Man, let me look up Josh Shaw's Wikipedia because you got it right. Like, it was a house fire and he jumped. Let me see. All right. Shaw was suspended by USC after he lied about how he suffered injuries to both his ankles. He had originally told the team he injured himself while jumping from the second story of an apartment building to save his nephew who was drowning in a pool. Okay. So, Jordan, you actually had it right. In reality, he suffered the injuries after jumping from his balcony to avoid police who had been called by a neighbor after hearing an argument between him and his girlfriend.
Detail.
No charges were ever filed due to insufficient evidence. He was reinstated in November 2014 and played the final three games of the season.
Just details, fellas. That's it. I mean, the crux of the story was right. He did hurt himself jumping out of a apartment complex. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he did anything wrong there.
Well, Sark thought he did something wrong. Sark dropping the hammer on him. BK, you got any thoughts on Blake Griffin's retirement?
Any thoughts on Blake Griffin's retirement? He was a hell of a player, man. I mean, those Lob City Clippers teams, I didn't like them, but they were so much fun to watch. And it just goes to show you the ineptitude of Doc Rivers as a head coach that they weren't able to even get to a conference finals, let alone an NBA finals. Because, I mean, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan on that same team with Jamal Crawford coming off the bench, like, that team should have won maybe multiple championships, and they never got close.
Yeah.
So he was a hell of a player, man. He really was. Obviously, his legs gave out on him early, and that caused him to fall apart pretty quick.
And it's wild for the Clippers too, because like you think back when that team had all those pieces, LeBron was on the other side of the NBA. He was on the East, and the Warriors weren't really the Splash Bros yet. Mm-hmm. They were just coming together. And, like, you look at the Rockets, and that was really before Harden started cranking out the MVP years, right? So it's like they just kept – like, I can't remember who would knock them out all the time, but it's like, yeah, they could never get it done.
Their closest chance, they were up 3-1 on the Rockets 1 year, and they blew it. And it was like right when the Rockets were kind of starting to take off, but like the Clippers were the better team. They had no business losing three straight. And that was like, that was the year. I can't remember what that was. I don't know, 15, 14, 15, whatever. But they had some chances, and they never got it done.
BK, you want some interesting Blake Griffin numbers?
Sure.
8 seasons with the Clippers. He's 21.6 a game. 9.3 rebounds a game, 1.5 stocks, 4.2 assists. The 4 seasons in Detroit, he's 20.7 a game. Rebounds go down to 6.7, but he's up to 5 assists a game, about 0.9, but about one stock a game. He's also at that point in his career shooting about 76% from the foul line. And this all-star year in Detroit, that 18-19 season, he was third team All-NBA. It's kind of makes you wonder if he doesn't have the injuries where his career goes, because at that point, he's shooting 36% from three, seven threes a game and making 2.5.
Yeah, I'll give him credit. Like, I don't know if the injuries kind of caused him to reinvent his game, but he did reinvent his game to, like, make sure he lasted a few more years in the league, because mm-hmm. Those injuries, I mean, yeah, he lost his athleticism pretty quick, and he wasn't a high flyer at all during his time in Detroit, but he still found a way to be really productive. So he gets credit for that. But yeah, I mean, if he could have had that athleticism with that 3-point shot that he kind of developed in his heyday, then he would have been even more of a problem than he already was.
Hey, Jeff, I want to ask you, Jeff. Sorry, Jordan, but before I forget this. So talking about the dunk competition, how can we not go all the way back to 1986, the legend that was Spud Webb?
Spud Webb. That's a nice novelty. You know, I compare, Rodney, you're a pro wrestling fan. Sure. I compare Vince Carter's dunk contest to like that heyday of wrestling where like ECW was popular. It's like, look, man, I can't watch a match where like dudes are taking arm drags and then there's like guys in exploding barbed wire matches and dudes getting like put through 9 tables and kicking out of finishes. Like I'm desensitized to it at this point. Like Vince Carter desensitized me to the dunk contest. Like it's never going to get better than this. This is great and it's awesome, but this is where it's going to peak.
Yeah. 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 That right there. I mean, that really seemed to me because, you know, Spud Webb, then I remember like going to Church's Chicken and you could buy the Spud Webb meal. It was, you know, Dominique Wilkins was on the same team with him. And it's like, you know, Neek knew nothing that he didn't even know that he could dunk. And it's like, okay, this seems kind of shady. Yeah. But anyway, whatever. But yeah, I'm with you. That kind of ruined all that, the Vince Carter thing. It's like, all right, whatever.
Not the bad kind of ruin. It's just like,
the good kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, wow, it's never going to get better than this. Ever.
Never.
Yeah. Yep. You old heads, man. Nothing can ever get better than what it was back in the day. I got to defend Jordan because those Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine dunk contests were awesome. And Nate Robinson was awesome. But if something happens one time in your life, it's like, that's it. It's never going to come close to this ever again. I'm going to be like that too. I'm taking my jabs all I can, but I sure as shit know that I am on my way to becoming that exact person.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jeff, by the way, soon in the next few weeks, I'm going to start getting out on the road, traveling, right? Since spring ball. A lot of times, some of these teams will also be working out in the basketball gym, and there's a few basketballs around. I'm going to ask one of these kids to jump from the free throw line for me because I know I can find someone that can do it.
You record that shit. You send it to me if you find it.
Okay, well, right? when Jonah Williams does that shit and jumps from the free throw line, or I get Devin Sanchez or someone to do it, what are you going to say?
I'll say today's athletes are finely tuned athletic machines.
All right.
That's what you call an athlete. A long way in terms of training.
Yeah. Yeah. athlete.
Wow. CB, why you got to put a damper on? We're having a nice conversation about the dunk contest, and then CB's got to be like, hey, you guys know Nate Robinson's going to die if he doesn't get a kidney?
Come on, CB, man. Give him your kidney then.
Man. Yeah, CB. Hey, why don't you go get tested?
We just lost OJ. Come on now. Calm down a little bit here. Don't make it worse. Come on, CB. Jeez.
Still reeling from that one.
Oh, I love you, CB. But yeah, it's like the Shane Gillis bit. It's like leaving George Washington's estate, and the last thing you see are like the teeth, and realize he had some slave teeth on the bottom row. It's like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. Somebody put him there.
Yeah. All right, BK, Double R, have a great midday program. Jordan,
we'll see y'all tomorrow. Hey,
get the Horns 24/7, 60% off your annual sub, plenty of transfer portal content. Whatever's popping off with Texas, we'll have it over there.
Beautiful.
Yes, sir. Go check it out.
We'll be there. See you guys. Later,